Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the 286-horsepower TL Type S with a sport-tuned suspension. Learn more at Acura.com.
We're not making a habit of this, but for this week's program, we have another advisory. There's language coming up that some people might find offensive. This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, November 27th, 2007. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, flarf. Part of the fun of this new movement in poetry is just saying its name, flarf. It's up there with Dada in the catchy name department. But what is flarf, you ask? Well, flarf is kind of hard to define. It's a lot of things.
First and foremost, flarf is funny.
I have never seen someone so loud and moronic and annoying and diabetic.
It's satire.
But it doesn't read as straight satire, because what it's satirizing is unclear.
I like to liken it to camp.
Calloused, knobby, aching, this is my grandmother's anus.
An embarrassment factor.
I'm
overworked.
Startled that they're wasting their time.
It's not really poetry at all.
But really, why waste my time?
Flarf is inappropriate.
New.
Come on, white people.
It's inappropriate.
Roll up your hamburger pants and let's talk about poetry.
Flarf is intentionally inappropriate, which begs the question, why would anybody want to write intentionally inappropriate anything? Well, Sean Cole's a poet and a radio producer, and he knows some of the flarfists, so we asked him to explain it for us.
I first heard about flarf 4 years ago at a poetry marathon at MIT. It was the kind of event where the readers and the audience actually talked to each other. And right away, I could tell that flarf was pretty controversial.
Douglas, put your fingers in your ears. This is a flarf poem. Thank you. Jellyfish dreams. That's the idea, Doug. Pop Rev Jellyfish, label number Lucky, 0003, 1958, the teardrops. Two. Jellyfish sentries.
The reader in this case was my friend Mitch Highfill. What I didn't know at the time was that he didn't exactly write this poem. He collaged it together using phrases he liked from Google searches. Google sculpting, it's called. All the flarfists do it. And when I say all the flarfists, there are about 20 of them now, constantly posting poems to the Flarf List, which is a private email listserv that's been running for more than 6 years. Mitch was involved right from the beginning.
When we started, there were rules. There had to be some sort of ethnic slur in every flarf poem. Typically, it was anti-Irish, just because Gary Sullivan, who invented flarf, is of Irish extraction.
I don't know that it was really invented.
This is Gary Sullivan.
But what happened, I guess, I mean, there's like a quote-unquote myth origin.
Basically, back in 2000, Gary caught wind of one of those scam poetry contests. They say they'll publish your poem if you win, and then everybody wins, and it turns out you have to pay them $60 or whatever.
Anyway, I was so angry and livid about this that I went online right away, found them,
and submitted the most offensive poem he could think up. He called it...
Mm-hmm.
Here it is.
Yeah, mm-hmm, it's true. Big birds make big dew. I got fire inside my huppa chimp. TM, gonna be aggressive, greasy. Oh yeah, God wanna do it. Dude, stay. Oh, yeah.
It baby. Gets worse. Nonetheless, about a month later, Gary got an envelope in the mail with his poem showing through a little cutout window and a letter telling him how important it was. So he did it again, got Mitch and a bunch of other friends involved.
And I was basically telling my friends, you know what, you're going to get this cool envelope, you know, like a window envelope with your poem in it. So if you have this like super offensive poem or whatever, it's going to be right there in the window and like the postman's going to see it. That's going to be great.
Soon, the contest received a flurry of intentionally bad poems. A lot of them Google sculpted, though Gary says the process is actually closer to painting.
It's like deciding, I need this sort of tone, I need this sort of tone, and you choose these tones based on knowing or having some sense of what you're going to get based on certain kinds of searches.
In fact, the very name flarf came from a Google search. Gary stumbled across the phrase,
flarfy mean purple. And it was in reference to marijuana. But we started using it as a verb. Let's flarf this text. Let's flarf this up. So it stuck.
And for a few months, flarf was just a distraction. But the thing is, Gary and Mitch and the others are serious poets. They publish a lot, get invited to do readings all the time, mostly in New York, where a lot of them live. And soon, they began to see things in the flarf poems that they liked. And this silly side project started to merge with their main project. Gary even read one of the poems to an audience just to shake things up. But a lot of them liked it. And then Gary realized, these poems aren't bad. They're awful.
I mean, which I think is a very different idea than bad. Bad is just like bad writing. Awful is something else. You know, I mean, awful is, you know, oh, I can't believe that. You know, there's something that really should not be going on there.
Best large labia free, best big tits, and best big butt women with outrageous huge boobies and live in large 100% sapphic fingering.
Basically, we're talking about what are people ignoring, really? And I think that this comes up in poetry all the time. You know, over certain periods of time, someone will come along and say, what have we been ignoring?
We're saying, why can't you be ludicrously obscene in a poem? Why not?
This is Mitch Highfill again, the poet who was reading at MIT.
Why does a poem have to be, you know, nice? It doesn't have to be nice. Poetry is supposed to change you. It's supposed to, any art, it's supposed to change your life. You don't read a poem to have something nice happen. Or if you do, I don't think you're really anywhere. That's nowhere. You read a poem to be affected, to be shook.
And to Mitch and Gary and the other Flarfists, a lot of the poetry flowing from academia into mainstream literary journals isn't going to shake up anyone.
There's a genuine sense from people on the Flarf list. I don't know if everyone would agree with this.
Mike McGee has been on the Flarf list since 2002.
That the language of chat rooms is, in fact, more interesting and more poetic than kind of 90% of the poetry out there.
What we do on the Flarf list often is we get hold of a trope of some kind.
The sort of memes that are in those poems get used and reused by other poets. Squid.
The squid is inspirational for Flarfers.
Deer. Ass clown.
Squid versus ass clown. Arthur Treacher grabs my ass clown. Ass clown grabs my squid. Squid signs me up for...
This is Sharon Mesmer reading at the 2006 Flarf Festival. Yes, Flarf Festival. If it isn't a movement at this point, it's got all the hallmarks of one. Sharon's coming out with a whole book of Flarf poems called Annoying Diabetic Bitch. And there are at least 7 other Flarf books on the market now.
Not a Gordon's Folly.
I like to have a little lute to tickle while the world's ending.
Katie Degentesh's book is stunning, in my opinion.
What's
and,
that called?
The Anger Scale.
I loved my father, and I loved Jesus. What was I to do? I felt like a cuckoo.
These are really good books and really good work. So in a way, Flarf failed. Because what the Flarf movement is producing is actually good work. And that wasn't the idea, you know. The idea was intentionally bad poetry.
Of course, some people still think it's bad.
Do you hate all Flarf poems categorically?
Well, that's what's interesting about Flarf. It's terrible.
This is Douglas Rothschild, the guy in the audience at MIT, you remember.
Douglas, put your fingers in your ears. This is a Flarf poem. Thank you.
And Douglas is a poet, too. He's known and argued with the Flarfists for years. To him, Flarf is the poetry version of the Emperor's New Clothes. And the whole Google sculpting thing is nothing new, he says.
It's a nice idea, but a whole book? Mountains of poets doing it? I don't need to go to a poetry reading to have it explained to me what it is that the internet is doing. I want to have an insight from a poet. Something. Give me something.
I mean, what makes it poetry?
This is Marjorie Perloff, a well-known critic and professor, generally a champion of the avant-garde. She first heard about Flarf when one of her grad students wrote a term paper about it.
Nothing is done with rhythm. Nothing is done with syntax. Nothing is done with sound, like repetition. It's not exactly what mania in free verse. And it is just divided into lines arbitrarily.
I mean, that sounds to me, you know, like the words of someone who hasn't read a lot of the work.
This is Mike McGee again. To be fair, Marjorie Perloff told me she hadn't read a lot of the work.
But I do think that the work is new in some important sense. It doesn't pay off all of the kind of traditional ways of reading avant-garde American poetry.
They're not that different from everything else that's out there. And by that different, I mean this. They still have white space around the margins. They're still written in block paragraphs, in a sense. In other words, you get a block of black print surrounded by white space. There's nothing very revolutionary here at all. But that's my own view of poetry, I don't only feel that way about Flarf, I feel that way about two-thirds of what's written these days.
Still, Perloff says she's glad that Flarf exists, that they want a new kind of poetry. And she certainly doesn't object to the outrageousness of it, she says. But many people have, especially in the contentious, divisive world of the poetry blogosphere. One Flarf poem was pretty much compared to an act of rape. One of Mike's poems sparked a summer-long online controversy in which he was accused of being sexist and racist. The title is a pun on a line from Lapis Lazuli by Yeats.
The line, their eyes, their ancient glittering eyes are gay. So it's their guys, their Asian glittering guys are gay.
Mike says he got defensive at first, trotted out all of his credentials, including his scholarship in African-American literature and race relations. But then it hit him. If you write intentionally offensive poetry, some people might find it offensive.
I think before that point, I had wanted them to find it offensive and inappropriate in the best way, you know?
So you didn't expect them to be offended. You just expected them to find it offensive.
That's exactly right. And so the fine line between those two things was something that I had to recognize.
Still, even in all the fighting, Flarf is doing something that poetry in general hasn't done in a long time. It is shaking people up and making them talk and think. It's engaging its audience in a way that's kind of unheard of for poetry these days. Mitch Highfield even went as far as to say he thought the arguments about Flarf were almost better than Flarf itself.
The fact that people are arguing about what is and isn't appropriate is a good thing. We need more arguments like that.
You fucked Jimmy.
Chicks dig war.
Ready for spanking?
Your vagina scares me.
Ew, ew, ew.
This is a serious poem, everybody.
That piece was produced by Sean Cole, who is a poet by night and a radio producer by day. Normally, this is the point in the program where I tell you about the thousands of poems and the dozens of related essays and reading guides we have on our website. But the truth is, we don't yet have any Flarf poems in the vast archives of poetryfoundation.org. But we do have one audio Flarf poem by Drew Gardner, who you just heard in Sean Cole's piece. It's called I Am So Stupid. Look for it under featured audio at poetryfoundation.org. And do let us know what you think of this program, where our motto is...
Something. Something. Give me something.
Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.